Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, two guests, though one of them has been here quite often recently, and that is Bill Graham.
Hey, guys.
He's back.
Yes.
Also back, though after a longer absence than Bill, it is Dan Gavazdin.
I think it's like my second or third time on the show,
yeah,
but
you
either
were
way.
Earlier this year.
I was, yeah, so it's good to be back.
It's great to be back. But you were here for Faults, and then you were here for Age of Ultron, weren't you?
I don't think I was here for Age of Ultron.
You sure about that?
Perhaps I was.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter, because we're not here to talk about that today. Today we are here for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to talk about The Martian, the newest film by Ridley Scott, starring Matt Damon, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Kristen Wiig, Jessica Chastain, Kate Mara. I mean, like, who isn't in this? Jeff Bridges.
Mackenzie Davis.
Mackenzie Davis?
Yes.
Is that someone who is or is not in this?
That is someone in that film.
Okay.
Also, Donald Glover.
Oh, God, I forgot about Donald Glover. Anyway.
He's the best.
For a movie about a man stranded alone on Mars, this movie has an incredibly packed cast, and we're here to talk about it. So, you know, yesterday we talked about Sicario. Everyone should know that you can follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Email us at podcast@filmstage.com. Let's not waste any time. Let's just start watching. Let's just start talking about this movie. Here is the trailer.
At around 4:30 a.m., our satellites detected a storm approaching the Ares 3 mission site on Mars. The storm had escalated to severe, and we had no choice but to abort the mission. But during the evacuation, astronaut Mark Watney was killed.
I'm entering this log for the record. This is Mark Watney, and I'm still alive. Obviously.
All right, so The Martian, guys, this is based off of the book by Andy Weir, and it is directed by Ridley Scott, who's been pretty hit or miss recently.
Big swings, big misses,
but no stranger to space odysseys, so let's see how he did. Dan Gavazdin, first of all, did you read the book? Second of all, what'd you think of the film?
I did not read the book.
Okay.
I become increasingly wary of like reading the books for these movies right before they come out. Not because I think it'll ruin my experience, just because my time for media is so limited. So if I'm going to see a story, I kind of just feel like one medium is enough. Unless it's like radically different. But anyway, I suspect that this book is not very different from this movie.
It's not really.
Yes, so perhaps I invested my time wisely. But what did I think of the movie? Gosh, I don't know. I saw it a little over a week ago, and it has rapidly faded from my mind. this movie, I feel like a couple years ago when Gravity came out and everybody was complaining about how the science didn't really work out and, like, you know, that too much time was spent, like, in space with characters talking about their history and stuff instead of actually, like, getting on with things. I mean, you guys heard these complaints, yeah? Like,
oh, yeah.
This is the movie for the people that complained about that. And I don't really – I mean, like, it was fine, but I think this shows how much better Gravity is as a movie, in that Gravity is about something.
Mm-hmm.
It has characters you can really relate to and feel emotionally for. Other than Matt Damon, which I think only gets by on his charm here. I feel like I didn't care about any of these characters. I felt there was very little tension in this movie. But that being said, you know, Ridley Scott, if anything, he knows how to craft a film, and this thing looks great and is constructed like a film that I would really enjoy. So yeah, it was okay, but it's not going to be in the level of Gravity for me.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, I remember walking out of Gravity just like, well, we saw it together. We were vibrating, like it was incredible. And just then, you know, you get on Twitter.
Maybe
like,
you were vibrating.
Look, man, we were both like, whoa, it was like a roller coaster. It was so good. And then we were like, ah, anyway. And I remember then seeing like, you know, what's his face? That one asshole who ruins everyone's fun.
Devin Faraci?
No, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. He was like, oh, ridiculous science, blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, he even said it shouldn't affect your enjoyment of the film, but the science isn't good. But people, of course, were like, oh, it's not 100% accurate. And I mean, I hadn't even really made this connection until you said it, Dan. But yeah, this is like a bunch of nerds got together and were like, we're going to do it right. And they didn't realize that would sacrifice a lot of like interesting thematic and story tension.
I don't think it has to.
It doesn't have to. The book did a much better job, I think, of balancing that.
Oh, so someone's read it.
I read the book, yeah. I guess I could say that now. I read the book, and it was a mistake because I think I would have liked the movie more if I hadn't read the book. Not to say I did not enjoy the movie. It was a fine time while I was there. I think that it tries to shoehorn in some, like, this is going to sound weird, some pro-humanity nonsense towards the end. In general, though, you know, like Dan said, it's a very handsomely made film. Matt Damon gives a winning performance. But, you know, I didn't feel a lot of tension. I didn't ever think that anything was going to go wrong. And that's not just because I, you know, read the book, because I've seen movies, you know, for instance, Anna Karenina, where I've still felt the emotional journey of the characters. But yeah, this movie didn't really ratchet up any tension or surprise me, but it was fine. it was pretty. Bill Graham, what did you think of this?
Guys, I gotta say, I came from the opposite direction. I really quite enjoyed myself throughout this entire film.
You get out.
this is a film to me that reminds me of the Jurassic Parks. It reminds me of those kind of mainstays of blockbuster cinema that, you know, sure, maybe not a lot of surprising things necessarily, you know, certain characters don't necessarily die and certain things don't necessarily happen that go wrong. But overall, you can just sit back and have a whole lot of fun. And like the Jurassic Park, you know, this is kind of, it reminds me of kind of pop science in a way. It reminds me of, you know, maybe.
Well, it's all pseudoscience.
Certainly, yeah. The film is called The Martian, right? We don't have anybody on Mars yet, so you know. And I think it's just a whole lot of fun. I think the dialogue, apparently, most of the dialogue and most of the film itself is either directly taken from the book or you know, slightly modified. I know. I watched it with a friend that had read the book, and so he was telling me afterwards some of the things that either were or weren't part of it, and he said most of the dialogue, like 90% of it, was just straight from the book.
Yeah, pretty much. And it actually has annoyed me in some of the reviews I've read where people have been giving credit to
Ridley Scott or Drew Goddard.
Drew Goddard, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing is – you know, I would love to praise Ridley Scott here, and I would love to give him all the credit for this film, but I can't because I know that Drew Goddard likely had a very large hand in shaping the script into what it actually is on screen. And then, of course, the novel itself has a lot of shape and it has a lot of character and it has all of these thematic elements that more than likely ended up plopped directly into the film. So, you know, it's like how much work did Ridley Scott actually do in this film? There are some sequences, especially towards the end, that I really found thrilling and quite above average. I really enjoyed myself. I think it's a 2-hour, 10-minute movie, somewhere around there. And it gets a little long towards the end, but I still really, really enjoyed myself. Oh, and it's funny as hell, too.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's, you know, it's an amiable little romp.
It was fine.
Yeah. It's actually kind of annoying how fine it is, because I don't know.
Not to discredit your glowing review of it.
Yeah.
I just thought it was fine.
Like, I can't 100% even argue with you over it, because it wouldn't take much to, like, maybe if I just had a better day. I don't know. Like, I can't even say, like, no, you're 100% wrong about everything you said. This is why it's only just okay. It didn't land with me. I thought that, like, some of the set, but I keep wanting to say, like, the set pieces are good, but there's nothing in my head that really sticks out as a set piece. Like, this movie, you know, something that would hold it back from Jurassic Park would be, if I were to ask you your favorite scene in Jurassic Park, you could say something like, the T-Rex attack outside the paddock, sure, or the raptors, yep, in the kitchen. And in this one, yep, it would be like, I don't know.
I would say the string situation towards the end of the film. Or ribbons, or I don't even know how to
call it. That's a highlight moment, but
I literally have no idea what you're talking about right now.
It was a very Gravity moment, if you recall watching The Martian and thinking, oh, that scene was in Gravity.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember this scene. Oh, wow, this is different.
Okay, I guess I can.
But let me speak about this scene, because I think you're right that that's a highlight of the film, followed by kind of the conclusion, celebration, whatever you want to call it. It's a emotional highlight, but I think it works because it's one of the few moments in the film where Ridley Scott shoots the film with any kind of awe for space or space travel or the danger of space or anything related to space.
Sure. For a film set on Mars, it doesn't seem that scary, does it?
No,
well, it feels like it could happen in your backyard. Like, oh no, we left Matt Damon at the truck stop down the street. You know?
Damn it!
I was gonna say it doesn't feel very Mars-y, Mars-ish. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Here's the other thing. Okay, I don't want to step on your toes too much, Dan. But here's the other thing. So this is not the original Mars mission, right? So I think that's kind of played into it. This is like Mars 3 or Mars 4 or something like that. So it's not like this is the first time any human has ever set foot on Mars. So we kind of know from the timeline of like a future Mars 4 and how long it's going to take to get there that they've probably gone through a lot of this process before and gotten a lot of kinks out of the system, right?
But they've never had someone stranded there. I mean, like, people have been traversing the oceans for thousands of years, but if you get stuck in a boat on the ocean, it's pretty fucking frightening.
The one thing that I liked about this film the most is some of Matt Damon's solutions to what is actually going on in the reality of the film feels earned and it feels real. It feels scientific. It feels like, oh yeah, that actually makes sense. I remember thinking a couple of times, specifically with like his rations, and by God, my God, this guy needs Spotify like crazy up there. But I was thinking about like his rations, and as soon as I thought, oh, hey, everybody else is gone, that means, and then boom, right in the film, he mentions it. You know, and so I feel like a lot of the solutions are kind of earned. Now, some of them towards the end are very kind of, okay, sure, you know, whatever. I don't know enough science to get around this. But for the most part, I feel like he's coming up with workable solutions that actually have sound science behind them. And they're not just Deus Ex Machinas or things like that.
I think that's fine that he's like coming up with these solutions. I don't discredit that they seem reasonable, but I want to go back to the thing you said. You said that he mentions his solutions, and that I think is my real problem with this film. And when I say problem, I mean, I enjoyed the film, but like what's keeping it from being in that rarefied territory of a film like Gravity or something along those lines for me is that his solutions are all mentioned. Like, you see him execute them, but only in like the most basic of ways. And he tells you what he's doing. I mean, quite literally, he tells the camera.
Right.
But I don't feel like Ridley Scott, who, you know, makes this movie look like he was a piece of cake to make. I mean, this guy,
sure, you know,
at this point, he's so practiced, you know. But there's no flair for, you know, no visual flair for how his rations are dwindling or how it will be represented. We're just kind of told it over and over again. And so much of this movie, I think, treads the line of telling rather than showing. And I know that that's like a really age-old complaint, but I think it's really true for this film.
Well, part of that issue, of course, is in the film, in the story itself coming from the book. He has nobody to talk to, right? He has nobody to interact with. So all of a sudden, most of the interaction has to be with some unknown source, some unknown person. And, you know, it's kind of audience surrogate time. Okay, what the hell is he doing now? Oh, he's going to talk into this little GoPro, you know, selfie time, and just making sure that he's got a journal. So, you know, if he dies, someone at least knows what he tried to do. But I mean, yeah, are your complaints about him explaining in detail everything that he's doing? Yeah, it wears on you, which is a good thing. Why the film at 2 hours and 10 minutes or so is short enough to almost sidestep that. It almost successfully gets away from being just, you know, guy talking to camera whole time.
But I mean, it almost moves too briskly through that, because he doesn't really struggle a lot, and that goes back to that lack of a feeling of danger.
I completely agree with this.
Yeah,
everything you're saying is the bang on truth.
That's how I roll. That's basically written on my family crest. the bang on truth. speaking the bang on truth to power. And again, I'm not like saying that this makes it a bad movie. It's just, it's a 3-star when it could have been like a 4 or 4.5.
I don't know if it could, to be honest with you.
You don't know if it could have been a 4.5?
Yeah, I don't know if it could. I mean, to me, this is a 4-star film, just on the brink of being really great. And I don't see a whole lot of room for it to improve, unless you're willing to break the chain of the Martian storyline from the book, and then, you know, make modifications from there.
But I mean, it worked in the book primarily because it was like they did have the opportunity to go into more detail and really show more process. And I think that's what's missing.
Think about like Breaking Bad, all the sequences of them making crystal meth. I don't feel like any of the science, I'm saying this in quotations, science moments really ever rise to the level of artistry of even just one of those meth sequences. And maybe
I'd agree with that. Yeah, for sure.
And even something like Castaway. I mean, we watch him try to make a fire, and you can feel the amount of energy and time that he's put into finally getting a fire. And so his joy at having created a fire is palpable. And in this movie, it's, I don't know what it is. Like, it's just like, I need to do this. It's going to be hard to, but luckily I remembered that I have this thing.
And do y'all feel like it could use more runtime?
No, I would easily cut 40 minutes from this movie.
Mostly the stuff from Earth.
Most of the stuff from Earth, but then also everything on their path, every time they're like, we're going to do it this way and nothing can go wrong. And of course, something goes wrong. And I got to be honest, by the end of the second act, I was like, all right, can we just have a success already? Like, I just want – because at this point, it just seems like you're delaying it. This isn't reality, so you can make up whatever you want, you know? So at a certain point, I was like, I got it. This is going to be difficult. Like, can we just do it? And it just wore on me because it wasn't being done in a truly innovative visual way to make me really that excited or tense about it. I mean, it all comes down to that old Hitchcock quote about the bomb under the table. This film, for some reason, did not make me feel like I knew about that bomb. Like, I knew something bad was going to happen, but I didn't feel tense about it.
Well, here's the funny thing. I don't know. Should we have a spoiler section on this thing?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So yeah, let's just do it. We've talked enough in the normal sense. I would say that if you want to see this movie, go check it out. I think it'll, you know, be a hit with families and stuff, and you know, it'll find an audience. It's not this year's Gravity.
No, not even close.
You know, which is a shame because it has a lot of star power and energy behind it, but it's comfortable with being good and so never approaches great. So that's my opinion. Let's get into spoilers. So
he lives.
Well, yeah, obviously. He lives.
So it's sorry weird. If you couldn't turn it off fast enough.
It's weird to me that there are certain things that they kept from the book that they could have lost, and certain things that they added that they didn't need to. What are you oohing about?
Well, I didn't know we were going to talk about the book. I might read the book. No. Okay,
are you serious?
Go ahead.
The goddamn spoiler section. Leave if you can't handle the heat.
So, you know, in the book, he still lives. In the book, that rocket that they're going to send to him with food explodes. And it's for the reason that they say in the movie, you know, they used protein capsules instead of actual food, and they shifted and liquefied and then distributed themselves weird. But in the book, when it's describing the science to you as it's going up, it was actually like a really stressful and intense scene. Somehow adding more science into a rocket launch made it more interesting. And in this movie, when I was walking
for
in,
I was like,
you know what? They could lose that entire scene because a book can afford to meander like that.
Sure.
And this movie, I mean, especially because it didn't have a feeling like he's not going to make it through the entire thing.
Well, let's back up.
It was weird. Like, they could have lost that entire thing and just had the Chinese come in with a different, just say, like, we don't have a probe that can make it. And then the Chinese say, oh, but we do.
Just back up because, like, you're saying that the book can meander on some of the science and stuff like that. Like, I imagine that the book meanders quite a bit on just what Mars looks like, what Mars feels like, what the atmosphere is like, and just a general sense of awe of being on this planet and things like that, that the movie never really does. At the very beginning, when you first see them on Mars, they're kind of joking around. They're having fun.
Well, this
and it's
is,
like,
that's
it's
another
like,
weird thing. In the book, this disaster happens on their third day on Mars. And in the movie, for some reason, they bumped it up to like day 18.
I'm not sure why they did that.
I don't know why they did that either, honestly.
Honestly, that's a little more plausible that they would have established this research base in 18 days rather than three.
Well, no, in the book, and you know, it's not really always fair to put things up against the movie.
It's never fair.
Yeah, but in the book, you know, like they said, they send most of that stuff up way in advance, and you know, the HAB is basically
already set up,
stretched over a bunch of other stuff, and so it takes like one day to move all the stuff into it. You know, they just have to, it just inflates itself because it has, you know,
that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's not like they had to build, you know, a cabin old west style. But yeah, and then
where are the Mars logs?
Were you clear about the sequence that I was talking about that was really kind of the highlight for me
when he launches into low orbit and
yes.
No. I'm talking about when Jessica. When Jessica Chastain and him are reaching towards each other. And,
oh yeah, yeah. Okay, so
same
thing. That's just later on in the scene.
Yeah, but that specific sequence was what really kind of had me going, because when they're spinning around and going crazy, like, I loved that stuff.
Here's the crazy thing,
which is like a direct carryover from Gravity.
It's very much a Gravity scene in the book. That whole like, yeah, they had to do the blowing the nose cone to slow
and
down.
The Iron Man stuff kind of
no, they didn't do that.
Yeah,
like they got him.
Yeah, like it was very anticlimactic. That's what my friend said.
But it was like anticlimactic in a good way, because we had had so many fuck ups, and they just had to explode part of their ship, and so it was nice for them to be like, okay, that worked. We've got him now.
Yeah, we scienced the shit out of that, right?
Right, and then so he doesn't have to. He does make a joke at some point about I could poke a hole in my finger and use it like a jet, you know, and, you know, I think he makes the Iron Man line too. But I mean, it's kind of like that's just him being hilarious. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, you're not doing that. And in this movie, he straight up fucking does it, which just seemed like an added thing that was completely unnecessary. And then the book ends as soon as he's in the airlock. And then this movie goes on for like another 10 minutes.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that far in the future, Iron Man will still be a social touchstone?
They're going to recast him, like
Bond. Yeah. He's going to live on.
I believe so. There's like Iron Man 27, and it's like the 14th iteration of Iron Man.
Yeah, it may not be Robert Downey Jr. playing this character.
Oh, no. It's going to be like some actor who hasn't even been born yet. I almost said one of the Olsen twins, because they're still my touchstone for like child actors, even though they're legitimately
like old adults now.
I can't think of any other children actors. Cody Smit McPhee. There we go. Cody Smit McPhee will be Iron Man by the time we get to Mars.
He could be that tomorrow.
No.
I watched this whole movie with kind of an alternate perspective on it, that it's the sequel to why am I forgetting the name? Interstellar? Or like the alternate universe version of Interstellar?
You mean the exciting, fun version of Interstellar?
Hey, I loved Interstellar.
Well, Matt Damon is yet again abandoned on a planet.
Yes.
And it's up to Jessica Chastain and her band of people to save him.
I think it is kind of weird that they managed to cast these two people in a film in very similar roles to their other space film. It just seems like they could have maybe Googled like film or actors in recent space films and then just like X those people out and been like, no, we've already seen that person.
Funny, they kidnapped them. They told them that they needed reshoots on Interstellar and then just shuttled them to this set. And by the time they realized what was going on, they'd already shot like a full reel and they were like, why not?
Okay, can we touch on something real quick?
Absolutely.
Is this the best Ridley Scott film since Gladiator?
No, that would be The Counselor.
No. Oh, God.
I loved The Counselor.
Oh, that's awful.
The Counselor had a verve and energy to it that this film was lacking. I think that if you liked
Gladiator...
That was
dialogue, you mean?
No, I mean, like, even some of the filmmaking in that. Like, when Rainier is running away from the hitmen, the whole scene in London with Brad Pitt. I mean, that was some great stuff in there.
I think he's had many films better than this since Gladiator.
I would actually go on a limb and say that if you liked Gladiator, you'll like this film. Which is it's not a bad thing. It's just that kind of same feeling.
I think Black Hawk Down, Matchstick Men, Kingdom of Heaven.
Wait, did Black Hawk Down come out after Gladiator?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really?
American Gangster.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
American Gangster's good.
I honestly think Prometheus is better than this film.
Oh,
but...
whoa. All right. We got to slow down and address that nonsense. Are you serious?
I think as a film, yeah.
Oh, boy.
I mean, as a visual kind of, yeah. I could agree with that. The visuals.
It made me feel more than this film ever did. Like,
I felt anger at Prometheus, and this is the podcast where someone once tried to convince me that feeling anger is better at a movie than feeling nothing. I highly disagree. Still, and I refuse to believe that.
I would rather watch
The Martian again than watch Prometheus.
I think on like a narrative level, The Martian is superior in all ways.
Okay, thank you.
But I like have no emotions for any of these characters. I have no sense of who any of these characters are. And say what you will about the dumb things that the characters do in Prometheus, at least I knew who they were, what they were trying to striving for.
You maniac.
Like, I think it plays into genre better than this film does.
But I think Prometheus is trying more to be genre. This is really going for some kind of scientific veracity. So, like, if he had walked into a cave on Mars and taken his helmet off, then I would say it's like Prometheus.
Agreed. Yeah.
This is the Ridley Scott movie where the astronaut leaves his goddamn helmet on.
Well, yeah, this is his answer for all Prometheus.
He tapes it up with duct tape.
Yeah.
Good lord.
That's a good scene, the duct tape scene. One of the few scenes in the movie with tension.
Right, because like something goes wrong. Like it.
Hey, well, a lot of things go wrong in this movie. But almost everything goes wrong in this movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, like he gets hit by an antenna and is left on Mars. That's something that goes wrong. But like it just never feels bad, you know? Like it never.
No, I completely agree with you.
When that side of the space station that he's on blew out, I thought he was pretty toast because I knew his food was gone and everything like that, and I was just like, how do you even come up with something to repair that side that's supposed to hold pressure? And I'm like, I'm a big fan of duct tape, but I don't know, man, I don't know about that. Like it, and he turns his back on it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like I would be sleeping facing that direction. I'd be like, nah. I'm gonna keep an eye on this thing.
I would be sleeping in one of the other airlocks.
Yeah. If I have to take my helmet off near that thing, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of time talking about Matt Damon on Mars, but I think the real snooze fest of this film is everybody back on Earth.
Yeah, it's weird because it's a bunch of really talented actors.
Did y'all kind of like that drama of whether to tell the – I found the idea that they had to focus on their mission when it seemed like everything about their mission getting back to Earth was very automated and like – oh no, like what do you mean they need to focus on their mission?
I think
it's
the idea that something could go wrong. Maybe.
So?
I mean, I don't know.
Well, again, we don't know enough. We don't know anything about these characters to make any kind of judgment about how they would feel about any of this.
Right. And again, not something that was wrong with the book. The book did a decent job of that. Again, not fair to kind of, you know.
It's kind of unfair, too, because, like, Matt Damon gets to have all the fun in the movie, and everybody else just has to be, like, deathly serious. Like, they're almost corpses. Like
it is.
There is a lot of time pressure on them versus him, and he's just, like, just coming up with shit on the fly. Like, all right.
Yeah. But you cast that. Michael Pena in a movie and you don't give him at least a joke to make? I mean, what do you do?
He does have one.
He has a couple jokes.
All right, fine.
Not as many as you'd want after seeing Ant-Man.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I think it's weird that Donald Glover's in this movie basically playing Abed from Community. I didn't quite understand that.
It's just another kind of like cliche stock character, the quirky science guy.
Yeah,
sure. Yep.
Yeah, everyone's
to do fun things with a stapler, but like, you know, which you can't claim for every role in a movie. But
this is true. Yeah. Basically, just this in Office Space.
I don't know, guys. It sounds like we've kind of run this through.
Yeah, and again, I feel bad. I don't want it to come off sounding like I'm totally down on this movie. Because I mean,
okay.
We've heard me talk about Black Mass.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. Versus Black Mass. Black Mass is bad.
Black Mass is bad. This is a fine film. I just it wouldn't have taken a lot more effort to make it really, really good. I don't know. That's all I can say. And again,
just put a little more oomph into it.
Yeah, it's missing a certain zhuzh.
Don't you go
je ne sais quoi.
And again, it's not even like I was like messed up because I read the book. It was just like I couldn't feel it. I wasn't feeling it. It was entertaining to a point, but it didn't engage me on the emotional level that I need to at least bump something up above a 3. You know, it wasn't a Shaun the Sheep, for instance.
It's a great love letter to science, and I think in that, it's great at that. It'll inspire a lot of young people to go into science and
do you think it will?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I was more inspired after Interstellar than I was with this movie.
Well, maybe, but I don't know. There's a certain kind of MacGyverness to this that I think a lot of people could enjoy. I suspect that people will really dig this film when it comes out, and it will do quite well at the box office.
Okay. I think it's going to do great at the box office.
It's also PG-13.
Right, so it's going to make a lot of money.
And very obviously PG-13. They go out of their way not to make this movie R.
Yeah, they like put some... There's like software in their text program that like every time he sends them something, it automatically bleeps itself out.
Well, I mean, go ahead and type something into a lot of software systems where it's going to be publicly displayed and you'll find yourself with stars.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not saying they turn it into a joke. They turn it into a joke, which I think is successful, but it's definitely like a half of the joke is that it's a PG-13 movie and can't be R, so they won't say the F word.
Yeah.
I think that's a hang up of the MPAA more than the film itself, though. Like
that is.
I think that's just the insanity of the MPAA.
Because this movie wouldn't get made as an R. No, it wouldn't.
Not after the success of Prometheus.
I have a funny story I have to tell about my screening of this movie, just because I have to have some forum to tell this story. I got invited to the LA film critic screening of this film, and it was on the Fox studio lot in their awesome theater there. And like, it was a veritable who's who of people that I love from film criticism. Including previously mentioned Devin Faraci. And so I'm sitting there, and they roll the movie in 3D, and there's no sound at all. So the 20th Century Fox logo comes up, and the entire audience starts singing the music out loud.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. It was amazing. And then the movie starts, and we're all just doing sound effects Foley stuff for the movie for like the first 10 minutes of the movie.
And then
they finally stopped it and rebooted it. But I was kind of like, I kind of wish the whole movie was silent.
Yeah, that would have been a beautiful crowd experience. Did you read Faraci's review?
No, I haven't read his review, but I've heard that it is quite glowing.
It is rapturous.
I did not see him having an orgasm in the theater.
Oh, I was going to ask if you turned and saw him like weeping and something. I don't know.
No.
I wish that I had felt that way. I wish I had. But instead, it was just fine. I don't know.
Mild amusement.
Yeah, it was, you know, this movie came after Black Mass and Everest. And so I was just like, oh, thank God. Thank God, a good movie.
I thought you really liked Everest.
What?
You're giving a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Incorrect, young man. I gave it a 2.5.
I'm going to have to look this up again.
You should, because I did not. In fact, you'll find that Jordan Raup, our illustrious editor-in-chief, actually had a 2.5-star rating for it on Letterboxd and wrote a disappointed review. And I commented on it and said, okay, well, good. Now I don't have to write my review.
All right.
Yeah.
We're done?
We're done. I think we're done. Now that we're talking about random shit like Letterboxd.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's it for today. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining to talk about this movie.
No problem.
Next week, we will be talking about The Walk with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Ooh.
So get ready for that shit right there. And we also, if you're hearing this and haven't heard the previous episode that came out
Sicario
yesterday... By the time you hear this, yes, it is on Sicario, a movie that I enjoyed much more than this. So if you're tired of me being down on movies, listen to Sicario and know that there is still love in my heart. Guys, let's tell the people at home where we can be found. Dan Gavastin.
Well, first off, I want to say that I'm looking at your account and you do have a 4 out of 5 for Everest.
That's... No, you're looking at the documentary.
Oh, I am.
Oh, you are.
Okay.
Is that up in the air?
No, the Everest, the IMAX documentary.
Well, my mistake.
You're goddamn right.
There you go. yes, okay. Everybody can follow me on Twitter at Dan Gavazdin. And I have a Spider-Man podcast called The Amazing Spider Talk that if you're interested in anything relating to Spider-Man, I host, and that's kind of my big thing. And yeah, I guess that's about it.
All right. Bill Grimm.
You can follow me on Twitter at CableBFG, and you can also find me writing about film at The Film Stage.
You can find me at thefilmstage.com as well as twitter.com/BrianJRowan. And, my personal site, dearfilm.net. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Tune in next time.